Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, May 7th. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, and here I am at bbsradio.com on Station 2 every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. So, as always, I'd like to thank the folks in the office at bbsradio.com and for the wonderfulness of alternative media, which helps us get through the corporate Zionist web of deceit and lies that we have through the status quo media and their opinion cartel. And so tonight I have a guest on that a friend of mine has been on here before, a multifaceted gentleman. I use the word gentleman loosely, as I do with all my male friends. He is a Vietnam vet. He's not only a musician, he's an electrician and a sound engineer, so he's real smart. And but I'm smarter, no, in certain ways. But anyway, I'm glad to have this gentleman back. Jeff, are you out there, sir?
I'm right here.
Hey, thanks for coming back on to Third Stream View with your host, PK, here.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, you are one of many people that I've mentioned this just sort of off the cuff with, that and this is no not a criticism by any means, but you are one of a lot of people, probably a majority, who weren't aware of the fact that there was three buildings that went down on 9/11, and I'm referring mainly right now to the third one, which is World Trade Center Building Number 7, 47 stories high, 5:20 in the afternoon, it collapses in its own footprint on 9/11, wasn't hit by a plane. It did have some fire damage, but, you know, no steel building has really ever collapsed from fire damage.
You are waiting for me?
yeah, see, it's your turn.
Oh, but, it's my turn. I was just enjoying your conversation there.
Well, thank you. But since I mentioned this to you, I believe it was last week, you've since looked it up, and you have noticed that that huge building went down in its own footprint like a controlled implosion in just a few seconds.
Well, I was really surprised that with all the television coverage and all that they spoke about why the trade buildings went down and this happened and that happened, that nobody ever said anything about Building 7. If they did, it was like on the back burner so far that nobody really gave it any thought. But well, you told me that there was another building that went down that afternoon like that. I went on the and Googled it and saw it on YouTube and everything as they showed the building collapse. And it was like and all the interviews of the different people that are technically minded enough to understand what it takes to bring a building down, and everybody was of the same mindset that it was technically impossible, first off, for the building to have come down due to the small fires that were internally happening in the building, which I'm sure could have been happening because of debris flying through the air and stuff and just smashing through windows, real hot and stuff like that. But at the same time, they were also kind of at a loss as to why the sprinkler systems were shut off on the building or didn't come on in order to stop what would seem to be just small fires here and there in the building. It was like the building was already shut down with no sprinklers turned on or whatever. And the other side of the confusion there is that there was some conversation between the fire chief people and everybody about the bringing the building down because of its maybe danger or problem that it may have for whatever reason. But then it fell the same afternoon after the big building fell. I mean, and it takes, normally they said when these demolition people come in to do a nice implosion for it to come down and not be too crazy, it takes about 2 to 3 weeks to implant all the proper explosions all down through the building to make it fall the way it should fall. Now, this was like a 47-story building.
It was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's not like it was, you know, like 2 or 3 stories or even 7 or 8 stories next door. It was a big building. And to make that big a building come down, I mean, we're talking about, what is Empire State Building's only, what, 100 stories and something or something like that? I forget how many stories it is. I'm not sure, but anyway, but so it was a really tall building. But it came straight down like it was like a super job of bringing it down. But it went down at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. From 9 o'clock in the morning, with all the chaos that was going on, for people to run inside, plant explosions, and get it all straight with everything else that was going on, with people still screaming and yelling and not knowing what to do to bring that building down. It's like that building had to be pre-planned to come down. It was no way. I mean, all the technical people said it takes a couple weeks to do it that way. So that leaves me totally not understanding exactly what happened. I mean, I can't point my finger and said, this happened, or the CIA did it, or the government did it, or the terrorists did it. I don't know who did it, but somebody brought that building down prior, basically had it planned to come down prior to 9/11, because they had to start setting explosions and getting, because they have to cut stuff and steel to make that happen. They have to go around and weaken the steel in certain areas and do all sorts of stuff that takes just, you know, weeks and weeks of cutting and torching and burning and setting explosions to make it go kaboom down like it came. And it came down just like the Twin Towers came down. I mean, it wasn't even, it just kind of went sunk right on down and just disappeared out of sight there. So,
You could also wonder if those buildings were pre-wired even long ago. And supposedly also that became the headquarters of Giuliani's, some of his stuff, CIA, FBI. There was other, you know, government agencies in there. So with the destruction of all that, all those records and that stuff disappears. But, you know, obviously there's no way terrorists went in there and wired that building.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if there's any video to bring a building down. You know, the implosions start at the base.
Right.
And I don't know if there's any video, because nobody was expecting it to happen, of looking at the base of the Twin Towers to see if there was, like, collapsing taking place down at the bottom. Because when they blow a building like that, they don't blow it from the top down. They blow it from the bottom, and it collapses within itself. But they have structural cuts and stuff done all the way up this huge building in order for it to want to collapse like accordion.
You're right. There were pictures of that.
I don't remember seeing any pictures, though, of the bottom of the building at the time of the impact to see, not the actual time of the impact, but when it actually came down, whether or not it looked like it came down from like the midway in the building or whether it came down from the bottom or what. I mean, that's, just speculation. I don't know. I'm like everybody else, all I ever really saw was constantly over and over and over and over again, of course, was the two planes hitting the building.
Sure.
And then there was all this other stuff that, you know, that the planes really didn't happen, but I'm sure they did happen, because people on the streets, lots and lots of people looked up and saw the planes hit the building. So it couldn't have been like an imaginary thing in all the eyes of all these people down below looking up and going, oh, my gosh.
That's true. There's no doubt that the planes hit the building, but they alone didn't take it down. You even see it on YouTube, the firemen talk about hearing explosions go off down below.
Yeah.
I've seen footage of beams that were, I think, vertical beams that were cut diagonally. And prior to the 9/11, there was some repair work and whatnot going on where they shut down the World Trade Center for work, you know, and crews are going in and out. So that had been the time that a lot of this stuff went down. Plus, there's a theory that it was brought down by, there's this other kind of destructive kind of technology, or I don't know, probably Israeli technicians have some of it, maybe the U.S., where they can use, I forget what they call it, electronics or something, some kind of high-tech stuff. But there's no way that the buildings alone came down from, those explosions.
With all the arguing that went on in the following 3 or 4 weeks and finger-pointing, it was really hard to figure out, who was shaking, the stick at who. you know, some people were saying it was impossible for it to have fallen the way it fell. There was other people were saying that, you know, it went down too fast after the explosion, even with the stuff up above. It makes you, and the thing about it is that when they build a skyscraper, any building really, the base and the lower areas are much stronger than the upper areas. So the even if it started collapsing or from up above, it's not like, you know, this 1 week floor and then another week floor and another week. As it goes down, because they have to carry so much more weight, there's more superstructure from the base up, probably up to the first 50% of that building was like really, really heavy duty for supporting the other 50%. So it really made no sense for it to come down like boom, 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 but it did. So, no.
Well, they both came down so uniformly. I mean, each one was hit by a plane, but they both sort of came down so uniformly. And then,
yeah.
I don't know if you know this, or most people probably don't, but, you know, soon after, when they cleared all that wreckage away, what they didn't dump in the sea, they sold to China right away. So there was less detective work available, and a lot of that stuff was pulverized.
Yeah, it was, you know, all that weight and everything coming into it. It was like,
well, yeah, but that's not, you know, if it was really an implosion, I don't think it would be as pulverized. It wouldn't be as dusty. You know, it would be, there's chunks of stuff, more chunks. And a lot of people don't know this either. It's not hard to believe, but there are organizations, and of course, a lot of them are from, I think, Europeans, but there's like architects and engineers for 9/11, you know, airline pilots who don't believe the official story and would like to see further investigations. But these are, you know, when you have architects and engineers questioning it from within and with outside the country, that certainly throws up a red flag right there.
Well, on a building, any building or buildings like that, you know, since I'm an electrician and I work on a lot of buildings and stuff, the what you have really is steel and drywall and insulation.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's basically all a building's made out of. I mean, it's got
lots
framing.
Glass.
You know, it's got glass. Well, there's glass. Yeah. So you got glass, but you got the superstructure, and then internally you've got hundreds of tons of drywall. You know, that are hanging up, supporting. You know, and so all that powder that went for smoke and dust and everything. It really was the weight of all that coming down and smashing that drywall that is a kind of a powdery form stuff anyway, in an instant crunch. So that was the smoke that they saw. It wasn't other than drywall powder. And it's hard to breathe drywall powder.
Oh, of course.
Everybody was like choked up and everything, and their faces were all white and everything because that's just drywall. That's white powder after it smashes like that.
But in other implosions, though, it's not as powdered. It's, you know, there's more, you can find more things, there's more things available. It's not, you know, this was,
well,
really...
Maybe not on other implosions to degree, but there's not too many implosions, though, that are the size of those two buildings. The inner structure and the thousands and thousands of extra offices that are in those buildings versus a normal building that's brought down. I mean, those were humongous buildings.
Oh, yeah. But fire alone didn't bring those down, and that, you know, the jet fuel doesn't burn hot enough to do that, as I understand it.
No, but even if it did, I don't see why... at some point, it would just not just stop. As it,
right.
Let's say it did collapse up there. It collapsed through about three stories, maybe. Okay, so you got all this coming down. I'm sure that, you know, that's a heck of a slam when something comes down like that. But for it to not weaken like the left side, or the right side, or whatever, but to weaken it in a perfect weakness,
yeah,
point where,
yeah,
all the structure on a couple of floors all the way around in a circle come down together to cause such an implant on the floors below it. It's kind of odd because you would think the side that the plane hit, where it's going in, it's first off, what happened, the plane flies into the building. Okay, the wings are knocked off, okay, as it goes in. The wings are where all the fuel is stored.
Right.
Even if the plane slid on through the building and came out the other side, I guarantee you those wings are sitting pretty close to where the entrance was, knocked
right
off the plane.
And they have all the fuel.
They have all the fuel. So it would have burned really hot on that side of the building, and not hardly at all on the other side. But they're saying it. Those were freshly, you know, those planes hadn't been in the air so too long, so they had a lot of fuel because they were on their way to for their daily run.
Right.
But even so, the wings and all the tanks would have dropped. And we have to say those are huge buildings, so they would have dropped probably within 100 feet. I mean, I don't know how wide those buildings were, but they're probably like the almost the size of a football field in width. So I'm thinking that probably within 100 foot, 200 foot, all that fuel would have like hit that side of the building, and that was where all the weakening would have gone. Is soaking down and draining down on a side, not perfectly flowing across that whole stance of a building enough to weaken all of those frames so that when they collapse downward. So I don't know. I'm a kind of a technical-minded person. So when I think of things like that, and I've never really thought these thoughts before. I don't sit around thinking like this. But if you start my mind thinking, I start creating the realism of how something has to happen. And they didn't really ever talk about that, like when the plane went in, that the wings were probably knocked off immediately, because I'm sure those wings, they're not designed to hang on that strong. I mean, it's like a missile
right
going through. I mean, you can knock a wing off a plane by running through a forest. You know, that's not steel beams.
Right.
So if you can knock wings off planes crashing into a forest, I guarantee you, with steel beams running all up through those buildings, those wings and jets and all the tanks fell off almost immediately after entry. Even if the fuselage of the front went halfway through the building, they left all the fuel way back where they went in. So I don't know. They seem to have never ever talked about that aspect.
Of course not.
Yeah.
One theory that I'm kind of partial to is that Mossad and or maybe the CIA, they flew those planes electronically into the buildings.
Well, it's hard to say. You know, they did say that, you know, that there was communications, and the other planes had the hijackers on board, and that they, when they did have the cell phones, and they talked back down to the people and everything else. And they did catch people that didn't make it and stuff like that, and find out how many hijackers there were and stuff like that. That I don't think so. I really think that there was people flying those planes because they were flying them.
But if all of a sudden the electronics takes over and you're powerless to steer it, you know. Plus, apparently, all those supposed hijackers, they were not. I mean, some showed up later somewhere else. They're not supposedly all dead. You know, I long for the old-fashioned terrorist, Jeff. You know what an old-fashioned terrorist are? You know what an old-fashioned terrorist is?
What is it? Somebody that comes up behind you with a baseball bat?
No, they plot their own crimes without enabling and or help from the CIA or the FBI.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. And there's been a lot of this since then, and it's a way to scare the people. And of course, all discussion of it, they like to say it's conspiracy theory. That's
right.
How they try to shut everything down, but it's not working. And
yeah,
there's too
well,
many
I'm not
people.
One for, I'm really not one for like speculating things that I have no knowledge about at all. Like I,
sure.
You know, I only, and just the way the government works and the news media works, I'm sure that they were really hotlined pretty quick as to what to say and what not to say.
Of course.
And what to, like, they probably almost put a shutdown on the media at that point, and everything that you heard or saw was almost instantly cleared by some office that's in charge of Homeland Security or whatever. They didn't really have Homeland Security,
no.
I don't think, before
they didn't
that,
give them. They didn't
they
give
had
themselves
other offices that are in charge of calamities and things of that nature.
They hadn't given themselves a $40 billion raise after that disaster and created the Department of Homeland Security, supposedly.
Right.
You know, that came later. But the thing is, the other real smoking gun is that prick Cheney had a NORAD stand-down that day, because normally they scramble jets immediately. Well, with a NORAD stand-down, they were conducting military drills. So the air traffic controllers didn't know, is this a military drill? Is it a hijacker? Is it business as usual? So what a way to obscure things, and then boom, the planes hit. Well, the same thing happened in London on July 7th, 2005. You had, they were having drills, and then boom, those subways, there was bombs in the subways, and the bombs blew upward through the trains as if they were underneath the train cars. So, and then they rerouted a bus that normally does its regular route, and, you know, so, you know, I don't believe that, it's my opinion that Osama bin Laden probably had next to nothing to do with 9/11, but he was the convenient guy to set up. He's the new Cold War person, so that's what they used, and it worked like a charm.
Well, as long as we have really, really long arms of government that are, like, so totally financed to the point where they can get away with hiding things so great. I mean, I don't know what it takes to buy secrecy or to keep people from saying what they know is a bad thing because they've been, I don't know, you know, I've never seen one of those contracts, you know.
Paid off or threatened. Well, of course you're not going to see one.
Where you sign it, and if you break it, I guess it's kind of like if you break it, it's not almost like you go to prison. If you break it, it's like maybe there's a clause in it that says you may not survive it.
Well, yeah, you know, there's like over 100,000 government scientists that take loyalty oaths.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think that loyalty oaths, hard word for me, is enough to keep somebody from spilling the beans because things work on you. But fear a loss of life or family or whatever, just like when they threaten on television and stuff like that. You know, you go testify and your kids, your wife, whatever. I would assume that most men, there's enough patriotic men that deal with stuff like that if they felt like something needed to stop or something needed to be brought out, that if it was just an oath or something, a piece of signature, that after a point they'd say, the heck with this, you know, the world needs to know. But so there must be more to these little signatures or agreements than just one person in one person's life. There must be a lot of hanging on the line, like a family or kids or
whatever. The threat of death or punishment or, you know.
Something's there because people that are really dedicated to stuff, that are really smart, aren't all chicken livered. I mean, there's people that are brave enough to make decisions, but you don't ever hear about too many of them. I mean, every now and then there's a whistleblower in the corporate world, but hardly never ever, unless it's a spy in the government or CIA or anything. I mean, they just don't. It doesn't happen, or they don't survive enough for you to let you know that it happened.
Yeah, well, it's all wrapped up in patriotism, too. I mean, like, I believe that, you know, of course, the CIA always needs their patsy. That's what Oswald was. I believe that the CIA largely whacked Kennedy, that they were largely involved in it, and even the other Kennedy. That's just how I believe that they do things. And they need their patsy, and the FBI used James Earl Ray to kill Dr. King. You know, so they get people who may or may not be in on it, and then they, you know, string them along. Well, just like, you know, Noriega, Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, they were all CIA assets at one time.
Yeah.
So there's all this underhanded double dealing and money going back and forth, and, of course, CIA is a big drug runners. So,
they utilize handing it off to drug runners so that drug runners can do other stuff. You know, they have their means of getting what they want done is based on one thing, getting it done. That's it. I mean, if it takes sacrificing this or that or this person or these people to get it to work for the greater good, as they call it, you don't want to get in the way of that. You know, I'm sure that a lot of the politicians and the senators and people know that, you know, accidents happen and heart attacks happen and things go on. So if you don't want to become a statistic, you don't.
Yeah, well, that's how they kill you.
You don't rock the boat too far because you may be a heart attack, or you may have an accident, or a plane may crash with you on it. I mean, there's
true.
Too many ways to make it happen to where, oh, gee, so-and-so died last week on a plane crash or a car accident or this or that.
Why not crash the whole plane just to kill one person that they need to, you know? And here you have it. You have the CIA, the Mossad, and Britain's MI6. The three of them work together, and let's face it, they are together and apart. They are masters of deception. That's what they do. And where does the CIA get its marching orders? That's what I'd really like to know. They get it from the president? Are they on to their own? How do they get their marching orders? Who authorizes them to do these things?
Well, the CIA is like the, you know, the wise guys of the mafia. And the mafia is the... is represented by down the chain ideas. Like somebody will have an idea of how something is supposed to be carried out, and then they draw out, and then they really kind of like leave the door closed on what's going to happen, but they don't leave the door closed on what they want to be the final offset of what
outcome.
Happened.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it would really behoove the U.S. government to be in charge of such and such and such a country or elected official there or whatever, because of what that would benefit the United States. But the president and the people involved definitely don't want to be the one saying, so go kill off the opponent or go do this or go do that, you know, that because that would be the, there's too many leaks that could happen on something like that. So the door, you know, ever since the Nixon tapes, and now it's so simple, you know, you can have a fountain pen in your pocket with a camera and a microphone looking right at somebody telling you something. And I guarantee you, most of the people probably that do stuff, know stuff, that are secretly, you know, getting this information and keeping it in a like a secured place, hopefully, so if ever they're up against the wall, they can say at one point, you know, well, you know, I've got this, and yada, yada. I don't want to ever be in the middle of any of that, because I'm too little of a guy to even think about, you know, coming up against a hired assassin.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Not my idea of a walk in the park.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, but that's. You kind of described it quite well, and they just continue to get away with it. And, of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism. And you said, you mentioned just previously something about, you know, for the good of the country, the good of the USA. I sort of used to think that, but I don't believe that anymore. It's for the good of those special interest groups, the politically connected, and their CIA, which has its tentacles and everything. So,
well, you know, the sad part about it is that the people of the United States, I don't really, and it's not knocking the people or anything, but I don't think there's that much patriotism anymore within the general public, because they feel like they've been shortchanged and lied to and taken advantage of, and they've watched wars happen that they didn't really want and they didn't agree with, and they see how they don't really have the choices too much, that a candidate comes in. Like Nick Romney goes into a state and, you know, he spends $50 million for television to kill off the votes going to someone else or whatever it might be. But it's such a financial, political backdoor game of winning. And the people of the United States are like educated to, you know, even though our system is not the best, we're educated. We see this all happening, and we see the negativity turning around when these guys promise this, and then, like, for instance, Obama's not doing half of what he said he was going to do for all his constituents when he got voted in, because he was really heavily
promising
right,
the world.
Right, he was heavily to the left to make things, to make money with all of the people that were really the big left wingers. To get him elected, and then as soon as they start moving towards getting in, they start moving more towards the center, which is the same thing with the highly Republican things. When they're real heavy on the, you know, one side or the other, I get the left and the right mixed up. I know I'm not sure who's left and right anymore.
Yeah,
but they all move towards the center, so that the general public doesn't hate them as much. Like, you know, that's why, well, he's not that bad, you know.
Right.
Look, he's not, you know, he, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot worse, but you know, I'm just getting back to where I'm going with this, is that I don't think there's that much feeling of, like, I'm a U.S. citizen now anymore. And it's not like the patriotism thing. I mean, everybody used to get drafted, so everybody went in the military. Back in those days, when everybody had to do 2 years, unless you had a physical or a family thing or whatever, but 95%, everybody got drafted and went into the military for 2 years. And at that point, there was a lot more patriotism because everybody felt connected. Now there's very few actually connected. The military is big, but it's not big. It's not big as if everybody went into the military for 2 years out of college or before college or however. So the only political, really heavy-minded people are the ones that are taken in and kind of brainwashed. Because even when I was in the Vietnam, or when I was in the military, when I was getting ready to go to Vietnam, I mean, they get you out in the field and they give you a weapon, they give you a dummy. You stand there and you yell and shout, kill, you know, and die, you know, as you stab with your bayonet into this thing, to program you to think that way, because it's not normal to think that way. Maybe a kid might play a little bit with a wooden sword or something when he was a kid. It's a whole lot different when you've got a rifle in your hand and you got another person in front of you, and you're really going to try to stab him to death.
And they want you to kill people or hate people that have never threatened you or your country.
Well, they want you to do what you're told.
Right.
So it's not that you don't have to hate them. You know, it's like it's just like an assassin. You know, assassins don't hate the people they kill. They're just, that's what they do. They kill. So, you know, there's no hate in it. You know, there's people, the haters are the terrorists, because that's the only way that they function. Is to hate. CIA and agents and stuff like that, they don't hate. They're just programmed to do what they do by being in it so long, and as they were brought up through the ranks to believe this is what it is that I need to think and how I need to function as this agent or whatever. And then it becomes easier. You know, but no, I don't think they hate.
They might not hate, but it's the things they do or don't mind doing, and they do it anyway, that brings this blowback and hatred back with them. Because if our government was overthrown by other governments or agencies, you know, we'd be upset about it too. And they get away with it. Of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism. Actually, I think there's still a lot of patriotism in America, but it's misguided.
Well, it's patriotic. I mean, I'm not saying the U.S. is not patriotic. I mean, it's not as deep-seated as it was back when, you know, I'm basically 69 years old. So I've been out there for a long time. And, you know, when I was a kid and everybody, like I say, went into the government, into the Army, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, whatever, Air Force, you really weren't that patriotic in a few of the services. But if you were a Marine or an Army guy, you were really patriotic. The Navy, they sit on the ships and go out. And my brother was a 30-year Navy guy, and he was on ships all. I don't hold it against the Navy, but they don't have the patriotism of a guy who's in the trenches and looking down the barrel of an enemy and knowing it's my life or your life when they're out on a ship having a cook make them 3 square meals a day, and they. Sure, they're away from home for 6 months to a year sometime on these tours, but they're treated really great versus a guy who's living in a hole in the ground, like when you're really in a war zone fighting a war, like Afghanistan and places like that. These guys, you know, it's better now even for them than it was back in the early days of the Korean War and Vietnam and Second World War and stuff like that. But they still, everybody's got it better and better and better and better. And that's good. You know, everybody shouldn't have to suffer because you're in the military. But there's not that strong-seated patriotism when, because the masses used to be drafted into the Army and the Marines, because you didn't really need that many Air Force. You didn't really need that many. The Navy was even smaller. Now the Navy was really big at one point when we were doing transport ships, but there was a lot of merchant marine stuff back in those days.
Not advocating conscription or the draft.
Am I? No.
Thank
you. I wish I'd have never got drafted.
So let me ask you something.
I'm not that dedicated to the idea of leaving and going and looking at somebody trying to shoot my brains out all day long.
This is another hypothetical, but it's just curious what you'd say. Knowing what you know now, if you knew a lot of what you knew now when you were a young draftee, what would you have done?
Well, back when I was drafted, there was, like I say, there was more concept of patriotic duty to your country. But even then, I mean, my brothers were in the Coast Guard. My father was a CB in the Navy. He was one of the bad guys, you know, that would go onto an island and clear it and then do stuff and build up the stuff and everything.
Right.
And then I've had Air Force. I've had every branch of the military in all of my brothers, and even one of my sisters was in the military. So
by the way, I don't believe that the military is our civic duty or our patriotic duty to serve. I think it's an option if one wants to.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it's if the country is in dire straits, I think this is one of those countries, even with our freedom of arms and weapons and stuff like that. People are used to the concept of protecting themselves one way or another. I think that people would jump to it. You don't have to tell people to defend this country if we are under stress or attack. That's one of the reasons why I don't think this country will ever be attacked outright like any of the other things. You'll have terrorists do these little sneak, just like over there where we're fighting. You know, they're not attacking us. Where these men are getting killed all the time, as in a fight, they're sneaking up and blowing a leg off and blowing this arm off and stuff like that. If they didn't have these bombs that they blow up, you know, we wouldn't be hardly losing anybody because they can't, on a 1-to-1 ratio, the U.S. government or U.S. Army has got the best trained killers in the world, you know, and they just couldn't stand up to us.
Well, the Israelis will let you think that, but it's the, you know, Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires, and they're not afraid of Uncle Sam, and they'll wait it out. They'll take as long as it takes.
Well, Afghanistan and a lot of other things over there, they're basically, we're kind of fighting the war right now over there the way the British came into this country and stood in a line to fight us when we were hiding behind the trees and in the bushes and shooting them. That's how we beat them. Really, was we didn't use the rules of war the way they stood up and marched into a slaughter.
Yet in the Civil War they did. It's too bad they did. You know,
well,
I wish Lee wouldn't have done that.
The Civil War was a really weird thing. I don't know why the Civil War that came later. They were just, you know, they had these masses, 10,000 men and 20,000 men and stuff like that, and they would try to just say we will overrun it. If they'd have been moved, see, the British didn't really have that many soldiers over here when we had the Revolutionary War, so they did what they did because that's all they'd been trained. But we didn't have squats, so we were like hiding, like I say, behind the trees, behind buildings, picking them off, and that's what they're doing in Afghanistan, all these places. They're hiding behind buildings and pressing a cell phone and blowing up a bomb or doing this or doing that, you know, which is intimidating and nerve-wracking and irritating and dismantling of bodies and arms and legs and heads. And so,
well, they got pretty small arms too, though.
It is, but small arm for small arm, we could take them out that way. I mean, because they if they do small arms, they usually don't last very long. We call it an air attack on the building where the small arms are. And they couldn't survive like that. We'd outgun them in every direction. The only way they can do what they're doing is the way they're doing it, with blowing with these bombs and stuff like that.
Well, it's guerrilla warfare. It's guerrilla warfare, but you know they beat the Alexander.
But we're not fighting guerrilla warfare. We're not fighting as guerrilla warfare. We're fighting walking down the street, driving the truck down the street, going into a town, and they know probably an hour or half an hour before we hit an area, kind of where they're going to drive through and what they're going to do, and they probably even have the bomb set at three or four different locations. So if we were to turn a corner and go another way, they got you there on that street too.
Well, it's still futile. It can't be won. It needs a political solution. And
Think we ought to be out of there.
Oh,
completely. I have never liked, ever since we went in, to try to supposedly get rid of the bad guy over there, the first one. You know, I thought, what are we doing? You know, we're over there, and the finger just kept pointing towards oil constantly. It wasn't pointing towards freedom. It was pointing towards power through controlling the government or controlling the oil fields and doing a little thing. I mean,
but there was
it would have benefited the U.S. government to keep attacking them every so often and knocking them down without really getting in there and doing this, because if we did it that way, we could have won every battle. The guys who make all the bullets and the rifles and the guns and the rockets and everything, they would have been happy. You know, we wouldn't have.
They're the biggest one of the biggest problems, the military-industrial complex.
Oh yeah,
which Eisenhower warned us against.
Every time there's an uprising someplace, these guys are sitting back going, "All right, here we go again. We got."
Well, they help foment those too, and they're tied into the CIA and the whole deal.
I'm sure they've got their own little CIA group that's not labeled anything special, but that go in and work out conflicts. Even if you arm a group that normally wasn't armed before with stuff and start a real bad thing going on, because now they've got guns and they can be brave and they can do things they normally wouldn't do, now you start a conflict. And with a little help, those conflicts grow into an all-out thing between two groups, two tribes, two this, two that, always two, never one, right? So they're always one fighting the other. And over there, it's like 10 fighting 10, because all the tribes are still not wanting to give any bit of what is they consider their little areas, a little bit of things, to anybody else. That's why even in those towns over there, we had such a hard time fighting. Not even just Afghanistan, but in Baghdad areas and all those places over there, because all those outer cities and stuff were actually kind of controlled by little tribal groups. They weren't little; they were big. They were like the mafia had this town, another mafia family had that city, and that thing. So they were kind of like bickering and fighting. But to try to get them to come together under one flag and to sit together and be buddies, I don't think so.
Well, they've always been very tribal, especially in Afghanistan. They've never had a strong central government. They're tribal. That's how they are. That's how they choose to live.
They're
making it worse by messing with them.
Well, they interviewed some young people one time, talking to them about, how do you feel about this and how do you feel about that? And it wasn't like Americans doing it. It was like people that speak their language that can actually communicate. And they didn't really understand how we think, why we do what we do, how we do it, because that's not how they live, and that's not how they think. The idea of not being the U.S. cities, not being in conflict all the time, and not having major disruptions and all that thing, they live century after century like that, or they've lived century after century like that. So they can't understand a different way of living, because they've been born that way and lived that way. So they don't recognize anything that we're trying to emphasize for them to do, because it's like religion. Once it's instilled into your system, to be a Catholic or a Jew or Muslim or whatever you are, for anybody to come in and try to change your whole attitude when your family and your father and your grandfather and everybody was that, it's really hard. So I think that, you know, that we're beating a dead horse over there. And if they want to continue to do it, I think we should just, we'll never do it because it's all big money.
And we have, they're all wheeling that horse for 10 years now.
But, you know, we used to have our best thing with all those countries when it came to oil and gasoline and all of that. When we left them alone and they were fighting amongst themselves all the time, because then we could wheel and deal the oil and the gas and stuff. What happened was, is when OPEC got together, all of a sudden they put down their fighting things amongst the oil groups and came together saying, look, we're really missing the buck here. If we stop fighting each other enough in these general areas about certain things, we can make a whole lot more money off the world. So they did. They created OPEC, which created a whole different standard of oil per barrel and money per barrel and for oil. And they started winning and making more money themselves. So then Exxon and Mobil and Shell, all these different companies that have these things all over, were having to work with their company now. We used to swing the big whip or have the big stick. Now we don't have the big stick. OPEC had the big stick.
We had to infiltrate.
Huh?
Well, I wanted to back up a little bit. That OPEC formed also because of the U.S.'s unwavering support of Israel. And that's been a major problem ever since. And, you know, I get that. A lot of people won't get it or can't accept it, but that's one of the things that really upsets these folks, and I understand that.
Well, I'm not like a Jew hater or anything like that, but there was back in there, what was it, in the 20s or something like that, there was a thing broken up. Before, you know, the Jews were hated by the Nazis and different places and stuff like that, but they were like, whether it was totally true in all aspects of it, but it was, they had a plan as to how to take over the world financially through negotiating with the banks and different things and holding on to all the big money and wheeling and dealing it as in the Fed, you know. It was like they wanted to create like a worldwide Fed control thing over the money that would be like for France and Germany and U.S. and all these countries. And it got knocked down because of a lot of other things that happened. Probably the biggest thing to knock it down was what happened with the Nazis and their killing off so many Jews and stuff like that, because then the emphasis became different as to how the survival of them in those countries in Europe, because they started being pulled out of all these countries.
Well, this is another
and they
big
were mostly
topic.
Bankers, but they were mostly bankers and rich people that were pulled in. I mean, if you were the average poor Jew, you got pulled in. If you were the average rich Jew, you couldn't get away, and you couldn't buy and sneak off to the United States or go to some neutral country, your butt was going to the concentration camp.
Actually, the Nazis and the Zionists, powerful Zionists, collaborated together to take people to Palestine. That's another topic, but there was a lot of collusion there and a lot of things that you would find shocking, the reality of it all. But back to this Afghanistan thing, another reason it's never going to end is because, well, just exactly who will surrender? I mean, what Army, Navy, or Air Force is there to fight, and just exactly who will surrender?
Who will surrender?
Who's going to surrender?
Well, nobody's going to surrender.
Right, because, you know, governments surrender, like Japan surrendered, and, you know, Germany, but who's going to surrender in this case? That's another reason it's not going to work. I've stumped some neocons or some hardcore conservatives on this, and they hate me for the question, but just exactly, I say to them, well, please tell me, just exactly what Army, Navy, or Air Force is there for us to fight, and please tell me just exactly who will surrender. Well, they don't have an answer. Who's going to surrender?
Well, as long as we're meddling in their country's personal feelings about who to like and who to not like and how to do this and how to do that. There's going to be hatred, you know, and it's going to be they don't like being bullied. Nobody, we wouldn't want them coming in over here in the United States and walking down the streets with the Muslim headbands on with guns and telling us how to run our country.
Exactly.
I mean, we would be at arms, and we would become what they are over there. We would have, with all the guns that we have, we would be hiding in the houses and around the buildings, and we'd be pot-shotting them and shooting them and blowing them up the same way they're doing us. It's human character to not like somebody telling you how to rule your house or your neighborhood or your state or your home area, and we're in the middle of these tribal things and what they're wanting to do, and it's another thing to when we're attacked over here, you know, to go after them. You know, we had to do what we did because if we didn't do it, it would have looked like we were being bullied, and nobody was going to do anything. So if we didn't do anything, then the next bully would try to do almost immediately or whatever. We'd be having planes, and we'd be having ships blown up and everything constantly if we didn't do anything.
Well,
so
we
have to do something.
They need to change the foreign policy and use in the Constitution allows for, like what Ron Paul said, letters of marquee and reprisal, where you can send in, if you will, bounty hunters to take care of business. You don't bomb and blow up a whole population area. You know, you take out the bad guys. But
well,
this is where it's confusing because I don't think. I don't think Osama bin Laden was you know guilty for 9/11, and he wasn't even in the FBI's most wanted list for 9/11. He wasn't even on there for that.
Well, when the guy sat there and told him about what he had accomplished in that video link after it happened, bin Laden was surprised as to how much success there was. So for him to be surprised at how much got accomplished and how well it went and everything didn't make me feel that he really had that much to do with the actual what happened.
Well, even if he did, how did Osama bin Laden take down World Trade Center Building Number 7?
Well, back
how did
to number
he do that?
7, right? I have no idea.
I think it was Mossad. The more you learn about Mossad, the more you realize, because their mantra is, by deception, we make war. That's who they are. And since they're Israelis and they're Jewish, usually secular, you know, people are afraid to criticize, or they think of the Holocaust, so that's a way to shut things down. Plus, if they frame all criticism of Israel, Zionism, or Jewish power, if they try to frame it all as anti-Semitism, then that shuts down any debate or argument right there. Fortunately, the mighty PK doesn't buy into that crap, because PK's not a hater, but he wants to know why things are like they are. How did this get to be this way? What, you know, why is it like this? You know, why are things like they are? This doesn't make sense, you know. And so there's nothing wrong with questioning.
Well, only thing about questioning, I mean, if you're questioning, you don't know the answer. And if you get answers, you're going to be told what people want you to know, not what the truth is.
Well,
you know, the problem is if you weren't sitting there like you say, a fly on the wall, at a meeting when all of it was designed and how it was put together, you'll never know who the masterminds really were. We think we know, but we don't really know at all. Even now when they talk about who did stuff, like right now the guy that's the number one man in the Taliban who was supposedly under bin Laden as his number two man, you know, they say he had a lot to do with making it happen. Okay, he had a lot to do with it. I mean, but he's free and he knows who his connections were.
But they can use these guys to enable them and get information out of them, and then they can turn around and Mossad or CIA can create the crimes, if you will, and blame these other people. They need that scapegoat. The patsy, and also in terms of patriotism, back to that, you said you don't think there's that much in the country anymore. I think there's a lot of it, but it's misguided. And I have the solution where most patriotism should be directed. Do you know where that is?
Give me a hint.
the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. That's where my patriotism goes. It's not the flag. I don't care about the flag. They can burn the flag all they want. They unfortunately, they burn the Constitution and the Bill of Rights more. Those are, to me, where we should put our objective patriotism.
Well, to me, my concept of
what's your concept of patriotism?
Is getting the job done. And like when they,
what does that mean? What if the job or the purposes are based on lies or misinformation?
Well,
manipulation.
Guantanamo Bay, right?
Right.
Waterboarding and all this stuff. You know, if I was in charge of Guantanamo Bay, and I'm, you know, I go to church and I'm you know me, you know, I'm a believer.
Are you saying that you as a Christian would allow waterboarding?
Look, I'm telling you that if somebody comes into my country and does what they did, and I capture enough people, and all I'm trying to do is find out information, you know, the rules of ethics are out the window, you know, and I would expect the same if I got caught. It's just like when you get caught in a foreign country. Or in a war situation, and you don't have a uniform on. At that point, you're considered a spy, and you can be up against the wall and shot.
But
now,
in this case,
there's nothing that hurts much worse than being shot to pieces up against the wall, because those guys aren't all expert shots. So I would assume that that's like getting the job done, and that's what I mean by getting the job done. Waterboarding would be like a walk in the park as to what I would do.
But here's where you got to back up in terms of ethics and even your Christian background, because you, the people that do that, are took an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution, which clearly prohibits torture. They took an oath to defend and support the United States Constitution, and the Bill of Rights prohibits torture. Plus, when the Japanese waterboarded our soldiers, that was considered torture. When Uncle Sam does it, it's not. So I see some hypocrisy there, a lot of hypocrisy.
I urge you to rethink your view
on that, sir.
It's kind of a gray area of why you would do what you would do, and I'm just saying that if you're trying to get information, and you're if you don't think these guys are guilty, you know, like I don't know why everybody in there wasn't like strapped down on a table and given tooth serum or something and just ask them questions where breaking down. I mean, these guys are mountain people, city people. They're not trained, fastened. Their systems aren't going to like hold back information. They're not trained to like spies to keep their mouth shut and do that. They could shoot every one of them up with tooth serum or something like that, one at a time. If they pass it, send them home. You know,
half of them might not even be guilty to begin with.
Right.
No trial,
so that way you find out. You know, just to me, you know, I feel the same way about these people that do all this stuff, you know, in courts and stuff like that. You know, to me, if a guy is guilty of rape or murder or something like that, and it's his word, or they can't find the body, or they can't do this, I'm saying it doesn't really kill someone to give them truth serum. They can do that, and 99 times out of 10, it works pretty good.
Well, I'm not opposed to that, but I'm opposed to torture.
Well,
I wouldn't want it done to me or my soldiers.
I'm saying there's ways to get the answers without playing all these pussyfooting around things in courts and in solitary confinement things and stuff like that. I don't know why they don't do some of the things that they do. Why they don't do some of the things that they don't do. They should. There's ways of getting information from people without, you know, you don't have to brainwash them into thinking it. You don't have to, like...
You can take their guitar away.
Yeah! Don't give them a microphone.
That's right. That might work.
I don't know.
So what do you see the economy going this year? What do you think about, you know, where do you see what lies ahead?
I actually made more money than I have in the last 3 or 4 years, and a lot of people didn't, but I did.
Well, I think you should pay a lot more in taxes because you're benefiting from the rest of us in the poor.
Well, I did pay a lot more in taxes last year, which I wasn't happy about.
I was just kidding.
But at the same time, I'm just saying, as far as the economy itself, I'm one of the few people that I know that, as I talk to friends that are in the same business and stuff like that, I mean, I'm very diversified. If
right.
I was just doing electrical, I couldn't have made it. But because, and actually, I'm not on stage anymore. I used to make a lot of money working in a professional traveling show band, but I haven't done that in years because of my age. But that was like great money, you know. I was making about $120,000 a year, running my recording studios and traveling and playing music and stuff like that. And but then when I got serious about life and wanted to get into business, and I started actually enjoying life more when I became an electrician and stuff like that, because I'm kind of an engineer mind kind of person. I enjoy developing and putting stuff together with ideas and making it come together. And so I've done a lot of stuff putting sound systems and camera systems and power systems and relay systems in all these different buildings and houses and stuff. And I really enjoy the challenge of a new project. When people ask, can you make us do this? Can you make it do that? I sit down and do it. That's exciting to me. But as far as the economy, I don't know about the economy. The economy is on an election year, you got the Republicans trying to make the economy go in the toilet. You got the Democrats trying to make it go upward somehow so that they can get reelected. So I don't have any idea who's going to win on this.
Well, one thing you haven't done as an electrician, you haven't pre-wired any buildings to explode and implode.
Well, some people would argue that with you.
Well, I'm not talking about any possible sketchy or poor workmanship here. Well, listen, Jeff, I'm going to wind down here. I appreciate you coming back on the show here.
You're welcome. Yeah, enjoy it.
I enjoyed picking your brain, and always interesting to meet someone new who didn't know about World Trade Center Building Number 7. So I've told
a
lot of
people. That was a real awakening.
It is.
And when you brought that to my attention, I'd heard things about, you know, they had these different numbers on buildings and different stuff like that, and they had like 5 and 4 and 3 and 2. They had all these numbers on different things, but I didn't ever really hear about another big 40-story building smacking down. I mean, for whatever reason, it was just kept out of the news.
Oh, they'd rather have it that way.
But why?
Not here on Third Stream View, baby. We talk about it.
Yeah.
So, and with that, I'm going to close here, Jeff, and I'm going to thank you again for coming on. Thank you to bbsradio.com, where your mighty host here, PK, can be found here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com. Station 2, 855 Pacific, 1055 Eastern, and 1055 Central, 1155 Eastern. This is your humble host, PK, signing off. Good night, everyone.